What up? All right, welcome in. Thank you all so much for tuning in to an amazing episode of Cannabis Insider. Here we're here for the first show of the week. We got a few more episodes here in November, but do remember we're going to be off Thanksgiving week. We're going to be off the last week of November for MJ Biz, unless Javier wants to do it on his lonesome without the beautiful me. But that being said, we have
Vegas with you.
I know. I don't understand. I'll be in Vegas though. If you're going to be in Las Vegas for MJ Biz, seek me out. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. Would love to meet your beautiful faces. With that being said, though, you're watching, you're listening to Cannabis Insider. Let's roll a tape and let's get into it. Javi, I'm going to start off today, man. I know you've been going cray-cray, but there's a lot of news worth covering. However, one thing to call out, y'all, we are about to dive headfirst into Q3 earnings season. We're going to have a lot to talk about. I am bullish on the top half of I think we'll see some good performances. I think TerrAscend looks to have a good quarter. I think you'll see some good Canadian results from the tier twos like Delta 9, like Auxly. I think there will be positive reports out there. And then I think there will be some not so positive reports out there. I think what I'm saying is incredibly not predictive. It happens every earnings call. But the reason I'm saying it is because sentiment always leans toward the latter. We always lean toward the negative reports in this industry. But I do want to call out prior to them even happening that there's going to be some positive movement. And we've already seen some pre-earnings releases, I'll say. And all of them are looking pretty sexy. Some stocks to watch today, Javi. AgriFi, not doing too hot. While MSOS and CGC are both up. We'll start with AgriFi. I'm not sure if you have seen the news on this. This is AGFY on the NASDAQ, by the way. But an investor, I believe, CP Acquisition Corp, is going to purchase the remainder of outstanding convertible and senior secured notes. They're going to waive any default events as well. Shareholders not liking this. They're not liking this too much right now.
Really? I saw the stock was rebounding earlier
today. It's starting to rebound now. Literally 10 minutes ago, it was down 7%. Now it's only down less than
3%. What was that Warren Buffett quote about the market? Oh my God. I'm trying to remember. Warren.
What was the one Warren Buffett quote about the market? Is that what you just asked me? Yeah. What's the one? Y'all, what's the one Warren Buffett quote about the market? What is the one?
Finds the market. That was what I'll remember.
Ooh, Amarinda Martinez, see you there. Mallory O'Connor, see you in Vegas. Excited to see you all there very much. And because you're going to Vegas, I assume you're coming to our Florida cannabis event in Hollywood, Florida, April 15th to the 17th. We're starting to preach about it now. Get your tickets. They're as cheap as they will ever be. That said, Javi.
Where do you get the CCC tickets for April 16 and 17 in Florida?
BZCannabis.com. BZCannabis.com and get your tickets there. They are seriously as cheap as they will ever be and incredibly affordable for the quality of attendee that we host at this event. With that being said, Javi, AgriFi, it's starting to bounce back a little bit. That's actually encouraging. Not as down as I thought it was going to be. So are you going back to AgriFi or going to do MSOS? Whichever one. Advisor Shares MSOS is having a stellar rebound day. However, last week, I think they were down some 20%. So like they got some way to climb here, but I will say rebounding from some negative sentiment, I think that was centered around the new Speaker of the House. But any thoughts there, Javi?
I mean, exactly what you said, right? Honestly, the new speaker doesn't bode great for cannabis. It doesn't bode well for many things. Might bode well for some. This is not a political show, but certainly not great for cannabis. However, we continue to see pushes on the legislative front and on, you know, every aspect of this. And we're still, you know, waiting to see what happens with safe banking. We're safer banking now.
And we'll be waiting, I think, for a little bit on both of those. Safer banking, sorry, I cut you off, as well as rescheduling.
It's all good, man. Talking about rescheduling, one thing that really caught my eye was some news out of Australia. Completely opposite side of the world. But the Australian capital, Canberra, decided to decriminalize low-level possession of illicit drugs, including cocaine, heroin, MDMA, methamphetamine, amphetamine, psilocybin, LSD, lysergic acid. And they specify how much you can have of each one. So, for instance, you can have up to 1.5 grams of coke, 2 grams of heroin, MDMA, 3 grams. Under no circumstances does this mean that I encourage the consumption of any illicit substances or any substances that might be harmful to your health. But it is good to see this approach by the government, where people who consume substances are treated as citizens, right? Whether their consumption is problematic or not, it can be addressed in different ways other than jailing them,
effing men, Javier. And that is the whole fight against the war on drugs and everything that this industry and everybody who has built the grounding of cannabis. We'll talk to one of those pillars today, Leslie Boxter, the CEO of Indoor Harvest Corp. Been around the town for a while. He's got a lot of insights to share with us.
One of my very first interviews, I remember, almost a decade ago.
Going to be a heck of an interview there. But all that said, y'all, this is exactly where we need to go. Even for those markets that don't want to give full access to marijuana to consumers, this is the direction that we need to take it. Last but not least, CGC for me, CGC is up almost, is up over now 9%. They're 9% up today. So keep an eye on these LPs, y'all. I do think that, you know, we'll see some rebounding. CGC probably won't stay up 9% if we're real. But all that said, High Tide is also up much less, not even 1%. Keep an eye on the other tier one LPs like Village Farms, Aurora, OGI, and Kronos. Kronos up 2.5%. So sentiment in the space today, positive.
Positive.
I like it. I like positive sentiment. Y'all, do you like positive sentiment? I'll eat that up for breakfast all day, every day. Javi, anything else on your mind before we jump into our interview, my guy?
I mean, a couple of things. One is Arkansas, right? The medical marijuana program is on pace to set a new sales record this year. In the first 9 months of 2023, medical marijuana dispensaries sold more than $211 million.
Wow.
Or 45,000 pounds of weed.
Boom.
How amazing is that?
Phenomenal. I love that.
And then, you know, this week, The Daily Show on Comedy Central has a new guest host, as we've become accustomed to. This week is Charlemagne the God. If you go to benzinga.com/cannabis after the show, you can find an interview with Charlemagne the God talking about why not legalizing cannabis is hypocritical. He says that there are studies that show that the addictive potential is not huge, that it is in no way deadly. We also have another interview coming out with Representative Nancy Mace, a Republican who supports cannabis and was a guest on The Daily Show yesterday. So benzinga.com/cannabis after the show to check out our amazing interview.
Who interviewed them from our team?
Yours truly.
Hey, the beautiful Javier Haas. Y'all, fun fact here. Keep an eye on this channel. Make sure to share it with your friends. It's very much appreciated from Javi, myself, and the team. We are going to be expanding our content here. It won't just be this beautiful interview show. We're going to be adding some of our editorial voices. We're going to be adding some production. We're going to be adding some third-party companies as well, and thought leaders that are going to be having some content on Benzinga Cannabis channel. Make sure to tune in, share with your friends, like and subscribe.
BZ Cannabis and Friends.
BZ Cannabis and Friends. I like it. We're going to be talking to a friend today. Let's go ahead and bring it on over. Aaron Thomas, let's chat with Leslie Boxter, CEO of Indoor Harvest Corp. Welcome, Leslie. How are you, sir?
Greetings and salutations. It's great to be here with you guys. Javier, great to see your face.
Great to see you, man.
Yeah, I'll be in the corner of self-love. YouTube go way back. YouTube go way back. So, Leslie, you've been in the space for a while. Set the scene for us, man. Talk to us about how you got started in cannabis and just your journey to date.
Well, I started doing my research at 15 years old.
Oh, gosh.
My high school bus stop. Learned how to snap my fingers on both hands the first time that I used cannabis on the 30-minute bus ride to school. It was a game changer immediately. I'd resisted it. All my friends had been smoking for a couple years, and I didn't try it, but I tried it at 15, and it was just eye-opening, quite literally. And then I moved to New York from New Jersey, and I ended up getting to be friendly with a bunch of people who worked at WBAI, an activist radio station, who were involved in the attempts to bring cannabis to the forefront and get it off the schedule controlled substances. I knew that the prohibition was bunk. I stopped using it personally, but that was just, I was working in the financial industry and I was one of those people who didn't smoke, didn't drink, didn't use aspirin, nothing. But I always knew the prohibition was nonsense. Came out to Vegas to do some research on the casino industry, decided to move here, and then saw that there was this West Coast phenomena. And this is 2010, 2011. And then 2012, a dear friend who I think you probably all know, Joe Bresny, political strategist. Without him, there would be no legal cannabis in Nevada. He started telling me that Colorado and Washington were about to pass it. Game changer. He said cannabis, the trending on nationally, was showing cannabis heading towards national legalization at some point, and many states starting to use ballot initiatives and more. This is 2012. I said, Joe, you're just a hopeful stoner. Not going to happen in our lifetime. Right. I was wrong. I came back to him after the election. He had told me what was going to happen in Colorado, Oregon, and Washington that year, and he was within 2 or 3 points on every single one of them. And I came back, and I said, how did you know that? How did you know? And he showed me all the data he was working for, and that was it for me. I had looked at this report in the United Nations report and a Rand Corp study that in like 2011, 2010, but in the year 2010, the black market for cannabis in the United States was over $42 billion a year. The total value of the revenue for the NFL, the NHL, the NBA, and Major League Baseball was under $30 billion that year. So you're talking about weed was bigger than sports in America.
Wow.
that sunk in. That was the game changer for me. I was all in, and I started taking my financial industry, investment banking, corporate finance sensibilities and trying to apply it to policy issues as the founding chairman of the first ever state chapter of a trade organization for the cannabis industry, the Nevada Cannabis Trade Association, and so industry association. And I just got very lucky. I was in the right place at the right time with good things to say, and I ended up advising the Congressional Cannabis Caucus, the governor of Pennsylvania, the government of Pennsylvania and other states, always just to try to help, make a better climate. But it's been close to my heart, the hemp industry, the cannabis industry since, and I am fully involved in it still to this day, even now looking at things like mushrooms and all of the other offshoots that are coming faster than I ever would have expected.
What a time to be alive. One of the things you mentioned is, you stopped consuming for a while, but you never stopped supporting legalization. Correct. You never stopped believing that criminalizing a plant was just ridiculous. No, but there's this debate, right? And I get this a lot, right? People saying, well, if you don't smoke, you shouldn't be an activist. And even more so, you shouldn't be in the industry. There's no way that you should be allowed to make money off this plant if you don't love it and consume it, right? And I don't know. I don't agree, but it seems a lot of people think that way. How do you feel, right? Do you feel it is a must for industry people to indulge in some kind of cannabis consumption or not necessarily?
So, So first off, friends of mine used to call the people that were really aggressive about that, they called them whacktivists. And so, which I've always thought was funny, but I want to make sure it's really clear. I think that activism is critical, and without it, we would not be here. That being said, the idea that there are rules about who can try to help us, that it limit the number of people that can help us to only people that are consuming in one particular, like, okay, well, does consumption mean CBD or THC? Or does it mean terpenes that come from the plant? What if I'm using THCV? What if I'm using CBDV? What if I'm using cannabigerol or cannabinol? What if I'm using one of the minor cannabinoids? Does that mean I'm not allowed? Am I allowed to? Or do I have to be getting high? Is that the rule? I mean, it gets so ridiculous when you go down that rabbit hole of mandated consumption to be a supporter. It's not even, to me, it just is misplaced enthusiasm that needs a conversation to be redirected into positive momentum. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And I'll follow up on that and say that when it comes to consuming the cannabis plant, everybody can have a different thought of what they want to consume it for the most part, when it comes to new consumers, right? You know, you'll have people that don't like getting intoxicated, but may want to use it for focus. Like, how do they find that?
Did he freeze just for you?
Product. How do they find that education? I froze. My back. I'm back. I'm not back. Javier, maybe take it over if I freeze again. But that said, I mean, the education to me seems to be lacking for new consumers. Do you agree with that? Do you think that there is easy access or easy understanding of cannabis at this point for those that they're trying to get in front of?
Can I say something to that?
Please.
Sure. So going back to 2014, I flew out of Burning Man on a little airplane to come down to Las Vegas to speak at a conference for the National Cannabis Industry Association at the Plaza Hotel. And I my conversation then, 9 years ago, is about the same thing I'm going to say now. The cannabis industry, the overarching adult use and medical marijuana industry, let's call it those, that are with the licenses in states for dispensaries and other types of access, the delivery, et cetera, that industry needs a self-regulatory body immediately. That is what's missing. If you go look at the history of the drop of federal prohibition for alcohol, very quickly after that, there was a self-regulatory body that was funded by the biggest players in the industry that had the capital to put towards it. And that self-regulatory body worked on getting that type of messaging out. It looked at what messaging needs to be out to communicate with the public and with elected officials, regulators, and show that we're responsible in regulating ourselves, that we're not going to make candy that looks that children are going to be able to mistake for candy, that we're not going to make products that are deceptive, that we're going to adhere to the testing requirements and we're going to be good actors, that we're going to educate about why people under 18 should not be participating in the use of this. And that education and that effort has to come from money raised from the industry itself to sell a regulatory body that has some type of teeth to affect people in some way. Leslie Engelking was doing something with something I think called Focus that I really thought was great. And I really think things like that need to have legs and get more established. It may not happen until federal policy changes, because 280E is such an economic burden on everybody in the industry that trying to reach into their pockets to come up with the money to spend $500,000 a year from the bigger operators, 20 of them, to create a $10 million budget isn't going to happen yet. But that's what we need, in my opinion.
Let me double down on that, right? Why are you so optimistic about self-regulation, right? It works for alcohol. I am always very skeptical of any entity that doesn't have enforcement power. Like even the UN, right? You think of the United Nations, and we see conflict after conflict. And you know, when you don't have enforcement power, there's not a lot you can do. John Oliver was discussing this weekend, you know, the cacao industry and chocolate makers, right? And they should self-regulate to avoid child labor. And it's been 20 years and we haven't seen that relationship. What makes you think that this would be different? Or that this would work?
I'm going to give you an answer that's going to make me, that I think will be controversial. Why does it work for alcohol? Because of the three-tier model, because of distributors. Because through distributors, you have teeth and you have enforcement. If you tell the distributor, this alcohol producer is not a good actor. They mm-hmm. can't be put on the trucks anymore. That's enforcement. My product can't get sold. I don't have somebody to, and I can't sell it direct. It's got to go through a distributor. And as a result, that gives it teeth. So maybe the trade is that the federal government gets smart enough, that's terrifying to say. the federal government figures out that they do a trade and they say, we will make this federally legal in exchange for the same model that exists in alcohol, where there's a distributor-based model in every jurisdiction, so that that can give a self-regulatory body enforcement capability through the distributors. The distributors mm-hmm. have to be part of it, and then they have to be told, okay, if you're not a good actor, here's the penalty. Your product can no longer be distributed. So that would be one possible way, and why I think it did work for alcohol.
America at its finest.
Well, yeah, but to be fair, Europe is absolutely steering into the distributor model as we speak. I mean, there's distributors vying for Village Farms and Aurora and all these European soon-to-be cannabis powers. Let's jump a little bit, you know, before we run too deep into this conversation. I'd like to understand what you're doing now. Tell us a little bit more about Indoor Harvest Corp and your goal there.
Sure. So my goal at Indoor Harvest really was to, I always thought the public markets are critical to this industry. I wrote a book that was supposed to be published, and then the publisher, the founder of the publishing company, went to Venezuela to try ayahuasca therapy, and he never came back and shut down his publishing company. And he's still down there.
Natural.
His family down there, he never came back. And so the book was about the sort of the convergence of the public markets and the cannabis and hemp industry. And I always saw the public markets as very critical. I was one of the first investment bankers that focused on the internet new media back in the mid to late 90s. And as a result, I've seen how much capital, wealth, how much it can make a difference to give an industry access to the money it needs to grow. And so when I had an opportunity to start looking at some type of business combination between my private business and a public company that requested me to come on as CEO in 2020, I was absolutely all in. It's taken a number of years to work on some of the issues to sort of get the public company to where we need to. And now we're focusing on the hemp cigarette company, a hemp cigarette company that we're in the process of acquiring. We're looking at some nutraceuticals. We have some things that we're looking at in AI, in the secure tokens as a mechanism to sort of provide value to both shareholders and consumers. And so we are, and then we're also looking now at some things in the mushroom space as well. And so the focus is really looking at the areas where we have products that have value to consumers, that are something we believe in, and where we can make more money, get paid more for what we produce than what it costs to make them. And in the case of things like hemp cigarettes, the margins are just off the hook.
Yeah, I would imagine. Can you, just from your perspective, right? I mean, we've had this conversation through a number of different product categories. Mainly recently, it's been beverage. When you think of Delta 9 THC, that's not originated with the marijuana side of the cannabis plant. But of course, we have Delta 8 that's rampant THC, THCA or V, I forget which one becomes Delta 9 upon heating. But all that said, we have these cannabinoids, you know, that are hitting the markets as an alternative to marijuana, especially in states where marijuana is not available. Talk to me about the demand for these products, and specifically your products, hemp cigarettes, you know, hemp and mushroom based, perhaps wellness products. Mm-hmm. What is the future? What is the market that you're fighting for?
So, you know, it's interesting. So let's talk about a couple of them. As tobacco use is on the decline, there is people like going back a long time, people like smoking things, whether it's clove cigarettes, sherbeti from India, whether it is an herbal mixture like the indigenous peoples of North America used to use and still do, whether it is cannabinoid-based. And it isn't, it can often be something that is other than just a straight intoxicant. It can be something that's part of a ritual, that's part of a process, or that is for wellness. And because it also turns out that when you light the cannabis plant on fire, burn it to consume it, you're actually creating other compounds, some of which are questionable in that, have health issues if you consume it too much, and some that also have other benefits. So we see that there is a market that will grow as brands get established that satisfy consumer need states without having the negatives associated with tobacco and while having the positives associated with alpha pinene, cannabidol, CBDV, THCV, and the other minor cannabinoids combined with terpenes, that there's a way to deliver something through that. So we see cigarettes as a great way to do it. It's an acceptable way. People like smoking. It has to be done in moderation. And done in moderation, we see this as something that can be an enjoyable and sometimes beneficial in some capacity activity. Beverages. Beverages are very interesting to me because what the cannabis industry has been trying to do, and I'm sure you guys are completely aware of this, is to try to create a beverage that will mimic the experience with alcohol and where the psychoactive ingredient will be a cannabinoid terpene combination rather than an alcohol psychoactive. And the key there is, if you're going to drink something that looks like a beer, it has to act like a beer, meaning it has to have an effect relatively quickly. You drink a beer within 5 minutes, you can tell that what the effect is. Well, we need to have fast acting and predictable. So if it goes through the regular digestive system, that's not going to happen. It has to have one of these encapsulated, nano-encapsulated or other form of emulsified way of having fast-acting product. One of the companies we've been talking to that had a great series of products that we'd like to see come back is the Quigley's line of fast-acting cannabinoid-based shots and beverages and things like that. Another thing that's very interesting about the cannabinoid-based alcohol industry, it doesn't have to worry about calories because unlike alcohol, it doesn't have that massive calorie and carb load. And so you can actually, you know, have something that has low calorie and a really great effect, similar to a glass of beer, a glass of wine, or even a shot of whiskey. And so there needs to be a lot more work on the delivery system and the predictability of the effect on a consistent basis. And I think that we're close to seeing that, but we haven't seen it yet.
Indeed. I agree 100%. No, I want to close it up on my end. I'm sure Elliot has maybe some other questions. I know we're on time, but we can go a little bit over. Talk to us a little bit about, Indoor Harvest's corporate strategy, right? You did a couple of interesting acquisitions this year. 369 Hemp, Metabiogenics, joint venture with MJ Link. You know, tell us a little bit about this corporate strategy to drive the company forward to deliver value to shareholders.
Super simple, actually. And this is, one of the things that I have learned over the years, a couple things I'm just going to say that are really key here, and that is simple is better than overthinking. Slow is smooth. Smooth is fast, right? We need to be steady in our approach. But the key to this is hemp cigarettes. So a 10 pack of hemp cigarettes is, might maybe cost us, if we're, depending on how good we are with it, $1 a pack, $2 a pack to produce. Wholesale, $10 a pack, retail, $20 a pack. That's the goal for a really good product. And if you look at the cigarette industry, and we're very lucky that we have Steve Papa George associated with us, who has been marketing and branding at the C-level to the alcohol and nightlife and tobacco industry for many years. And so the idea and the focus, to give you a quick answer, is high margin businesses that can scale quickly, that are blue oceans, where we have enormous markets available to us, and we know that the markets are there, our data shows that they're there, and they haven't been penetrated yet. And so, and as well as products that will be able to deliver value and take part in harm reduction in some way. So we want to make sure we're doing something that ethically we're aligned with, and we want to make sure it's highly profitable and it can scale. And in the case of hemp cigarettes, if a single customer represents $500 or $1,000 a year in revenue, and that's at an 80% margin, you know, and we're looking at anywhere from $300 to $800 in profit per customer, then we can spend $200 to acquire that customer and still be profitable. So the math is we just need to keep raising money to buy customers, keep raising money to buy customers until the math changes. Does that make sense?
Perfect sense.
And yeah,
is harm reduction, right? Taking someone away from cigarettes, away from this nicotine vapes, with which, you know, we don't really know the harms that they will cause, but we're slowly finding out. I am personally a big advocate for hemp cigarettes in general. So, but
there we go. Maybe we should do a product review.
I want to speak with you offline about that. That is great to know. We're big believers in it. There's a lot of data, and they've been selling them in other parts of the world going back 7, 8, 9, 10 years. Like,
oh yeah, no, in Germany, my friends in Germany stop smoking. They all buy hemp stuff now, and they go like, you know, at first it's like, don't they get you a little bit high? And it's like, no, they don't. If they're done right, they shouldn't get you. They should get you 0% high.
That's right.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, no more than a cigarette does, certainly.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Let's do a product review. Let's all do an after-hours hemp cigarette smoke sesh. Who's up for it?
100%. Are both of you guys going to be in Vegas?
I will be. I'm going to advocate for Javi to be there, too. He should fly from Argentina.
I just came back from Chicago. Now I'm going to expos in Chile and Uruguay. I got to represent Benzinga down here.
So let me say, I just want to say this. I'm also chairman of another company called Vuit. VEUIT.com, VuitTechnologies.com. And we have a podcast studio down here in Vegas. That's gorgeous. I mean,
nice.
Beautiful. And so if you're down here and we could go do something, you can use it. Like just tell me you need it and we'll go do something from our studio. I'll make sure you get all the materials. You see what it is ahead of time. You know what you're going into. But I'm talking like, you know, 9 screen wall behind us. High def screens behind us with the graphics that we want. I'm talking about, this is the company, the chief creative officer is Jonathan Sanger for that company, who's the, you know, he produced The Elephant Man, won an Academy Award for another film. He created the Mission Impossible franchise as president of Cruise Wagner for 10 years, Tom Cruise and Paula Wagner's production company. And so that's the level of production we get out of this. I would love to get you guys down there and make it available to you to use for whatever you need.
Well, thank you for that, Leslie. That's really nice, man. Well, we'll definitely see you in Vegas then. That's for sure. That being said, you know, thinking of, you know, other items, right? We talked about, you know, wellness. We talked about just the human need for for things to consume. One thing that I'm just not hearing from any hemp company right now is about industrial uses.
You just opened a can of worms.
Hempcrete was approved as a building material a year ago, and I still haven't talked to anybody that's doing it.
I'll tell you why. Hempcrete is too tough. The reason it's not being deployed in a very large capacity, and why do I know this? What is the one thing that Vegas has over every other city in the world? Every conference comes here. So years ago, we had the cement and concrete conference in Vegas, and I sent my staff there. I said, go talk to everybody about hempcrete and find out if anybody has anything to do with it. And there was a couple of guys, and they said the same thing. The key to the use of concrete and cement is that there are methods to get rid of the flash, the excess hardened material in the molds, on the machines, etc., that are based upon chemicals and products that have been created to address that very issue. Hemp is too tough, and they can't use the same chemicals to get rid of it. It doesn't work. The hempcrete makes it is too difficult to work with. So until somebody comes up with a way to deal with the flash and to make it a true competitor to the existing industry, it's going to be a challenge to be deployed in a large way. And it's the very thing that makes it good is what makes it hard to scale right now, at least based upon the information I got a number of years ago.
Interesting, man.
But when you talk about hemp for industrial use, let's hit a couple of things. The average U.S. consumer uses over 700 pounds of paper per year.
Wow.
Get your hands around that number. Like, that's massive.
I'm assuming most of those are just bills and stuff like that, right?
The packaging, newspapers, you know, everything that, like, paper is everywhere in our lives, right? It just shows up all the time. And so the paper industry, which is in the hundreds of billions of dollars, that hemp as a competitor to paper is a massive shift, but it's going to take investment. Because while the paper industry has had 70 years to advance, the hemp was off the market and didn't have the same investment in technology to advance it. What it has going for it, though, is if you've never been to a town that has a paper mill, you don't even need to go to the town. You just need to be 20 miles away. There was, I'm not going to say what town it was. There was a town in New England that was well known because all of the neighboring towns were like, you could always tell when somebody's from there because they smell bad.
Mm.
The odors that the paper plants produce are so massive that living within their proximity, it gets into your body. And so that the chemicals, the environmental impact, and the inefficiencies associated with pulp paper from old growth trees, it's an easy one to say that the transition to hemp will not only be a positive in that regard, but again, it also ends up sucking more carbon dioxide out of the air, whether you believe in anthropogenic global warming or not. Getting carbon dioxide out of the air to try to reduce it is a positive thing. Hemp will do that. Plastics, multi-trillion dollar industry. And so we all know about the garbage patch in the middle of the ocean. Mm-hmm. What we need to be doing is working on hemp plastics for packaging. I just heard, I think it was Canopy, is shifting to hemp plastic for some of their products.
All right.
See that across the industry. There should not be a cannabis product on the shelves in the United States that is packaged in anything but hemp. The paper should be hemp. The plastic should be hemp. Because when you take plastic from fossil fuels, hydrocarbon-based plastics, they biodegrade into toluene and benzene, endocrine disruptors, horrible poisons, carcinogens, and it takes hundreds of years sometimes for them to biodegrade. We all know about the microplastics in our bodies, in the food, in the water, everywhere. And if we use hemp plastic, not only are those, it does not create the same microplastics, benzene, toluene, it also ends up being, again, a net positive, because instead of pulling carbon out of the earth in fossil fuels, turning into plastic, and then making and releasing all that carbon dioxide into the atmosphere in the process, you're actually going to be creating plastics out of hemp, pulling the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, putting it into the plastic that then goes into the landfill, essentially creating a segregation of carbon back into the earth. Again, negative carbon, negative industry at the same time as creating better products that will be less harmful. And then, of course, fibers. There's no reason why we shouldn't be working on hemp being a competitor to cotton. Uses less water, easier to process, more durable, and has many other positive qualities. The industrial uses of hemp are coming. It's just going to take, years to invest and develop the tech and to get it deployed.
Indeed. I saw this chilling stat last week that the number of pieces of microplastics floating in our oceans outnumber the stars in our galaxy by 500 times.
Why do you have to get me down, Javi? I gotta kill my mood, man. Jesus.
But hemp is coming. That's a good news.
What that is talks about an opportunity. And then it also says, who knows? Maybe our role on Earth was to make plastic. I don't know. Maybe that's what humanity was put here for, appeared for. Maybe there's something about that. Again, the plastics, fiber, and paper represent $3 trillion a year in business opportunity. And just to give you an idea, like if we could just get, as hemp just gets a portion of that, that means that the market value that will eventually be created around hemp, industrial hemp businesses, are going to be in the trillions. And it's coming, it's just taking time. And the main thing preventing it, again, even though hemp is legal, the Farm Bill, et cetera, as long as it's tied somehow to cannabis, meaning It's only hemp if it's 0.3% or less. That means that in any time of the processing, it goes up above 0.3% or more THC. And that means when you're processing it for CBD, et cetera, if it goes above that, which it always does, it's now illegal. It's now considered marijuana according to the federal statutes. So until we deal with the federal statutes, there's going to always be a line that creates a problem in this being deployed in any meaningful way, because all large businesses are going to be prevented by being too close to federal illegality through Schedule One. And that's really, until we figure that out and get that out of our way, it's going to continue to slow real progress.
Mm-hmm. Leslie, we are way over here, man. What an interesting conversation, though. You have a mountain of insights.
Ask me to be on anytime, and I am happy to help. Ask me to introduce anybody that you guys want to speak to that I might know. I'm happy to help. The work you do is important. You get the word out in a really critical way. The fact that Benzinga is continuing to do this over and over and over again and has taken the chance on this industry and really created a business here, I support it 1,000%. Anything I can do to help you guys, you just have to ask, and I will go out of my way to help in any way I can.
Bingo.
Yeah. Leslie, you're the best, man. First ask for me is let's grab a beverage or a hemp cigarette in Las Vegas.
Absolutely. Please let me know what your schedule is, and I will make mine accommodate yours, and I will have my team make our facilities available to you for whatever you need.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. Appreciate that. Appreciate everything. We will chat with you again soon. Keep it up, man.
Have a wonderful day, guys.
You too.
Go check out INQD on the
INQD. Keep it going, y'all. We need some hemp in our lives. A lot more hemp in our lives. Put the dollars behind it. Put the education. This industry can do a lot to change this world. Javier, any last thoughts, my guy, before we hop off for the day?
Great show. Just benzinga.com/cannabis for your daily dose of cannabis news, and bzcannabis.com to get the tickets now for our April conference in Florida. We're going to Hollywood, Florida this time around. We got an amazing agenda shaping up, great speakers, and honestly, very excited. If you're interested in getting some help finding the best cannabis stock opportunities, go to marketfi.com and check out our Benzinga Pop Profits product led by the visionary Michael Berger from Technical 420. Hey.
He's almost as cool as us, is what I'll say. Almost. Just kidding. Michael's awesome. Javier, you're awesome. Thank you for all your work. Thank you again to Leslie Boss, Box Score. Apologies, I think I mispronounced it when he came on. The CEO of Indoor Harvest Group and a pillar of cannabis knowledge. Really appreciate everybody tuning in. Share with your friends. Until Thursday, we'll be back again with a couple more amazing executives in the space. Have a great, great week. Peace. We'll be right back.